You're listening to Soccer Report Extra with Bobby McMahon and Owen O'Callaghan.
Welcome to this week's World Cup edition of Soccer Report Extra podcast. I'm Bobby McMahon. At the controls is producer Luke Crawford. Unfortunately, Owen can't be with us this week, but he will be providing his picks. You might remember, those that are regular listeners, as we decided to get into a preview and some predictions. This past week, the first 14 games have not exactly put us in great light. After 14 games, I'm 7-7, which isn't bad. It's okay, I guess. But it's a hell of a lot better than the 4-7 I was this morning before we got into the Sweden game, the England game, and the Belgium game. Before that, it was an absolutely abominable 4-7. Disastrous Sunday that just about everything went wrong. Owen's sitting at 6-8 at the moment. As far as exact scorelines are concerned, I believe I've got 3 with a precise scoreline, and Owen's got 1. So that's a bit of a silver lining to a pretty dark cloud at the moment. But so far, the World Cup, I think, to say it 5 goals wasn't very exciting. But it wasn't very exciting. Russia and Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia were about as bad as the team that got slaughtered 8-0 by Germany back in 2002. It was putrid performance. So I'm not sure there's too much we can read into that Russian score. The first real big game, obviously, was Spain-Portugal, and Ronaldo's taken up the headlines with his hat-trick. But somebody who I can't remember who it was mentioned on Twitter, if you're Spain, you're probably not thinking that was actually all that bad, even though it led 3-2 with 3 minutes to go. And as much De Gea threw one in the net, got beaten by a free kick on the other one, and the other one was a penalty kick that was given away very early on. Diego Costa got 2 goals, looked sharp. Busquets and him linked up quite nicely on 2 of the goals. And so maybe there's some positives to be had for Spain, even though it was a 3-3 draw. Of course, it's been a week of the big boys struggling with Germany losing to Mexico. It was a massive one. It wasn't just Germany losing. It was how badly Germany had losing. And I never thought I'd say this about a German international team, but they looked completely unprepared and looked incredibly lackadaisical in terms of the fleet-footedness and the drive and the aggression of Mexico, who completely out-hustled them. And certainly, as far as speed of foot was concerned, they were a good half yard quicker than Germany in almost every facet. Now, we can look at that poor performance, but we also need to remember 2 things, I think. One, that historically, it's very rare to find a team that can go from start to finish in the World Cup and play well throughout it. Very few teams have got 100% records at the World Cup, so I think that's why the cream always rises to the top, because the cream always have the extra gears to move up. So I think that's something to watch for as we begin to get into the second round of matches after the first 2 games on Tuesday. The second thing, and I think this is probably the most interesting piece, is how the tournament tends to open up, because we do get these surprise results. It's always very straightforward. We do our brackets, we do our picks, and you know, we've got Brazil winning their group, and Germany winning their group, and France winning their group, and it goes on and on and on. But the reality is that these things get mixed up, and Germany are now in a position where they've pretty much got to win their last 2 games, and even then they may not win the group. So you have the possibility of a Germany and perhaps a Brazil, but even Brazil dropped 2 points against Switzerland, but you could get a Brazil-Germany game in the last 16, opening up some of the other slots for that surprise side that we tend to find getting to that semi-final spot. So something to watch for over the next week. But from there, we'll get into Tuesday's games. The first game up is Colombia-Japan. Colombia, I think, is one of these teams that might benefit from some of the shenanigans that's going on with some of the elite teams, some of the bookies' favourites who are struggling through that first round of games against Japan. Now, we don't see too much of Asian football in North America, particularly at the international level. And so we do see a lot more South American stuff, and we see a lot more of Colombian players, mainly because they're playing in Europe. But I think Japan's record at the World Cup is not very good. In fact, it's pretty awful. They have shown flashes of brilliance now and again, but I just don't think this is going to be one of these tournaments. So I'm going to pick Colombia to win this one on Tuesday, and I'm going to pick them to win by 2-0. Poland-Senegal, I think, I picked Poland to go through from this group, but I think this could be a bit of a surprise. I think you look at Senegal, they've got some good players. Koulibaly, centre-back, great season for Napoli. Sadio Mane, we know about from Liverpool in these days at Southampton, can cause any defence in the world some problems. So although I picked Poland as a potential dark horse to this tournament, I think this one might turn out to be a draw. So I'm going to pick that as a 1-1 draw. So that brings us to the end of our first round of matches, and then we get into the late game on Tuesday, which is Russia coming off their 5-0 win against Saudi Arabia, and Egypt suffering through that late Jimenez goal that gave Uruguay the 1-0 win. I guess that was last Friday. Egypt, I guess they don't necessarily have to win this, but you think they do need to win this. In terms of mathematically, they could probably get to still have a point and still find a way of getting through, maybe running up the score against Saudi Arabia and hoping that Russia lose to Uruguay, or other way I guess is Uruguay losing to Russia but getting a result out of that one, and Egypt running up the score in the last game. But I don't think so. It's hard. It's difficult, and it sounds a little bit not contradictory, but a little bit insane, really, to say a team that scored 5 goals and won 5-0 wasn't all that impressive. But I just wasn't all that impressed. I thought Saudi Arabia were so bad that I don't think you can actually draw a fair conclusion from that Russian performance. I said Egypt. I thought Egypt would go through at the expense of Russia, and I'm going to stick to that. Whether we'll see Mohamed Salah tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow, it'll be afternoon in the Americas, but I'm going to go for Egypt to win this 1-0. So that brings us to the end of part one, and we'll be back with part two shortly.
You're listening to Soccer Report Extra. Keep up to speed with the podcast and get all the latest news, musings, and rants from Bobby and Owen by liking us on Facebook at Soccer Report Extra. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to part two of the World Cup special Soccer Report Extra podcast. I'm Bob McMahon. Owen O'Callaghan can't be with us today, but at the controls, as usual, is the maestro, Luke Crawford. And now we get into Group B and the first game on Wednesday, Portugal-Morocco. Morocco were quite disappointing for me. I was expecting a lot more from their game against Iran. Unfortunate for them anyway, another very late goal, this time an own goal. I thought they played some pretty football, and they looked like they had players that were quite willing to take the opposition on, and then it all sort of withered away. It's almost like they lacked the self-confidence to actually push through. So once they'd kind of gone past a couple of players, it was almost like, well, job done, that's pretty much it. And Iran kind of got a foothold in the game to a greater extent after about 20-25 minutes of this. But I thought overall it was a pretty poor game, and I just really am going to be quite surprised. Morocco's best chance of getting points was against Iran, and I just can't see how Portugal are going to stumble. The Portuguese performance against Spain was, I thought, well-balanced. Defensively, you know, they looked shaky at the beginning of the second half, but generally, through the majority of the game, they weren't too bad. But Ronaldo and Guedes up front, Guedes looked a bit nervous, did lay on that second goal for Ronaldo just before half-time. I thought the midfield was very effective. Moutinho was good. Carvalho was, I thought, very, very good, actually, sitting in front of the defence. And I think it was Bruno Fernandes took my eye as well. So I see this one, Portugal-Morocco. I think I'm going to go 3-1, because I think Ronaldo is on a tear at the moment. He's in fact on an unbelievable tear. Just written an article for Forbes this week that will be posted on Tuesday morning. about Ronaldo's scoring statistics since he turned 30 with Portugal. He has more than doubled his goal scoring rate. He's gone from something like, I think it's something like 0.48 goals per 90 minutes before 30 to 1.04 since he turned 30. And that's in something like the last 32 or 33 games. A quite phenomenal set of scoring stats for Ronaldo. So anyway, 3-1, and Ronaldo, maybe not a hat-trick, but he's a favourite for the golden shoe or the golden boot, and I expect him to at least get one. So I'm going to put that one down as 3-1 for Portugal. Uruguay and Saudi Arabia. Uruguay, I'm not sure about Luis Suarez. I think, in fact, I'm pretty certain we've seen the best of Luis Suarez. I sensed at the end of the season with Barcelona, and whether it's accumulation of tiredness from season after season, but he looked to have lost his sharpness, and he doesn't look like he'd regained it. He had a pretty torrid time of it in the against Egypt for Uruguay. Cavani kind of floated around and did his stuff, and it finished up with young Jimenez, the defender, getting the goal. Him and Godin, I don't know if there's two defenders you'd prefer to have at the centre of your defence late on in a game when the opposition are trying to pump balls into the penalty area. The two of them are absolutely fantastic. And I noticed that Jimenez has signed a new contract for Atletico Madrid. How other clubs were not lined up to sign this kid when he's playing for Uruguay at the under-20s beats the hell out of me. But between him and Godin, they make an incredible partnership, not just at the club level, but the international level as well. Saudi Arabia, if Saudi Arabia score, I think it will be a miracle. I just can't see how they can live with a Uruguay team that will kind of grind through them. They're just tougher than them, harder than them, more committed than them. So I'm going to go for this one. I think I will go for Uruguay. Uruguay don't necessarily score a lot of goals, but I can see them getting a couple in this one. So I can see this being... Oh, I think I'm going to put this down as... I'm going to go 2-0 Uruguay. I'm tempted to go higher than that because I think it's in Uruguay's best interest to run up the score. But I'm going to stick to 2-0 on this one. And Uruguay going 6 points for... 6 points out of possible six after two games when they dispatch Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia likely, almost certainly, will be finding themselves in a position where they cannot qualify for the World Cup, and they'll be home before the postcards. Last game of the day, it's evening game in Russia, but it's the afternoon game in the Americas, Iran and Spain. Iran never showed me anything special at all. I thought they were a bit fortunate to actually get the 3 points. A draw would have been, I think, a fair result between Iran and Morocco. But Iran are going to be kind of disciplined defensively. They're going to try and grind it out, but I just think Spain have got too much for them. I thought Diego Costa looked very sharp, notwithstanding his foul on Pepe, which probably would have been given as a foul if it had been on anybody else except Pepe. But between Busquets set that one up, and he also set up the second goal for Costa as well. But I thought it was finally a situation where Costa looked like a player within the Spanish system. So often before, we saw him intermittently in 2014, but he looked a little bit like a square peg in a round hole playing for Spain in that World Cup, and he never seemed to fit, but he looked to me like he fit in that game. And I think there was some good things about that Spanish display, not despite the three goals. De Gea has been part of De Gea's game for many, many years, where he takes the force out of the ball, out a long range shot, and he kind of cushions it and then dives on it. Unfortunately, the second goal from Ronaldo, he didn't cushion it enough and it spiraled away from him into the corner of the net. But he had a bit of a bummer of a game in one of the friendlies leading up to the World Cup as well. But he's a good goalkeeper. He's a great goalkeeper. And I think he'll put that behind him. So I'm going to go for this one. This is when the big teams start spreading their legs and showing their class, as David Coleman once said about an athlete. I'm going to go 3-0 Spain in this one. So just to recap my predictions for Wednesday: Portugal 3-1 over Morocco, Uruguay 2-0 over Saudi Arabia, and Spain giving Iran a spanking of 3-0. So let's move on to Thursday. That's six games down, six to go. We've got Denmark and Australia, we've got France and Peru, and we've got Argentina and Croatia. Right up front, guys, I would freely admit these ones are pretty hard to pick. And I can find myself going always to Sundays on these ones. But we'll start with Denmark and Australia. Australia, I thought, against France, played a lot better than they did against Honduras in the playoffs for the World Cup spot, when it was the Asian fifth team versus, I guess it was the fourth team from CONCACAF. And the Australians can complain about the VAR application, but the VAR application was right. The referee might have missed it, but clearly Griezmann's back foot was clipped by the defender, and the defender didn't come anyplace close to the ball. Slightly fortunate, I think, with the Paul Pogba winner, which turned out to be an own goal, rightfully again. Umtiti, I have no idea what he was doing with his hand up in that in the penalty box, giving away the penalty. But I think there was some pieces of that performance that Australia might give Australia confidence. Denmark, Peru kind of huffed and puffed and had the great opportunity to take the lead. The penalty kick was not a good penalty kick, although understanding it's Cuesta who took that, has actually got a penalty kick record of something like 85% success. But it was a bad time for that 15% to click in. But Denmark kind of hit on the break. Christian Eriksen, who Owen and I were joking about last week and how much Denmark kind of rely on him, but it was him that set up the goal. Poulsen kind of took the goal very well, but Peru continued to huff and puff, but there just wasn't enough there for them. This one, I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw here. I think Australia are going to get a point out of this, and it's not because I don't like Denmark, but I just can't find myself picking Denmark to win this one. But interestingly enough, just as a point though, looking at, and I don't know how many listeners know about this out there, but there is such a thing as an unofficial World Championship. And the concept of the World Championship, the unofficial version, is it's like a boxing-style challenge. So many years ago, somebody went back to 1872 in the very first England-Scotland game, which is the first international game played, and basically looked at, that was nothing draw, so I had to wait for a winner then. And then the next game that they lost, that team that won became the world champions. So on, it's gone on and on and on. And so I believe Scotland were actually the world champions again. I mean, this is really hard to believe. But Peru took over that. I think it was Peru were world champions. Scotland were trying to knock them off. That's what it was, in a friendly just for the World Cup. Peru kept their title. But in losing to Denmark, Denmark are now the world champions. So it's not Germany, it's Denmark in another kind of competition. So interesting to know that, I think, anyway. But world champions Denmark to draw 1-1 with Australia. France-Peru. France. Oh, jeez, where do you start with France? Because they just didn't seem... I didn't think they had... They weren't playing their top gear, that's for sure, against Australia. I thought that generally Griezmann, even though he got the goal, didn't look like he was nearly as effective as he should have been. Mbappe kind of played in little spurts. Dembele as well. Dembele went off when they made the double substitution. I think it's maybe Fekir, and Fekir came on. Giroud came on as well. And probably it's not without coincidence that they scored the winning goal when Giroud was on the park. But I think Peru will still have a chance, even though they lost the first game, if they can get a result against France here. So I'm actually going to pick this one as... I think I'm going to pick it as the first 0-0 draw of the tournament. So I'm going to go France 0, Peru 0 in the very first scoreless draw of the World Cup so far. One interesting thing is we sit here predicting these results, that after 14 games, we still haven't seen a red card. Last time at the World Cup, 2014 Brazil, there was only 10 red cards issued over the 64 games. That was the lowest number going back to Mexico in 1986. If that number comes down any lower than 10 this time, I think it will be something that will be very noteworthy and perhaps a little bit of an unintended consequence of VAR being instituted and the players maybe a little bit concerned about it. So early days perhaps, but no red cards after 14. It'll be interesting to see once we get to the end of this week if there will be a red card, but so far so good. And then the last game of the day, Argentina-Croatia. My God, what Argentina a disappointment. I saw so many tweets about Mascherano and his passing statistics and how he'd passed the ball more times than Iceland. But I tell you something, he never played one important pass. He took the pace out of the game, and I don't know if that was because of the lack of options. I don't know if it's the fact that he's perhaps not as sharp as he should be. He's not got game fitness. But whatever reason it was, he was actually a detraction to Argentina's game. He didn't add anything to it at all. Starting Bilio in the midfield along the way, Sampoli would start Bilio in the midfield with Mascherano against a team that pretty certain you're going to dominate in Iceland, because Iceland are going to sit back and park the bus or park the trawler, one or the other. Beats the hell out of me. So once Benega came on, I thought they looked a little bit more dangerous. And Meza starting on the right didn't kind of work for them too well either. So he finally kind of came off and substituted. And I'm going to say Rodriguez, but I can't really say that for certain. But he started on that left side, and I thought he provided a lot more spark. Aguero got the goal, but didn't do very much else. There was very little movement around Argentina. Off the ball movement was pretty much non-existent. And overall, just a really poor performance. Caballero in the goal was just an accident waiting to happen. It just wasn't what we'd, I think, hope for. And Argentina, in the meantime, have got to get past this this habit of just giving the ball to Messi and expecting him to perform miracles. Because every time he got the ball against Iceland, he was gang-tackled by at least two, sometimes three Icelanders, and it was absolutely impossible to create anything. He got some shots away, but he was so well covered for the entire game. But I'm going to stick with Argentina, even though they're playing a Croatia side that handled Nigeria with relatively ease. So Croatia going into this game with 3 points, Argentina with 1 point. But notwithstanding, I think Argentina are going to win this, so I'm going to go 2-1 Argentina on this one. That brings us through to June 22nd, which is a Friday. Another three games. Really, it's absolutely wonderful to gorge on this feast of soccer every day. Some days we even get four. And when we go down to three, we think we're getting shortchanged. But notwithstanding, early game on Friday is Brazil-Costa Rica. Costa Rica, certainly not the Costa Rica of 4 years ago. Not surprising anybody. Serbia with some good players in them, not quite sure they've got enough. If they get to the last 16, I think that's pretty much going to be it for them, but I'm not sure they will get that far. But anyway, I'll come to them in a second because we're going to talk about Serbia-Switzerland game. But Costa Rica looked like they got a little bit of life when they made some changes, but generally, I just don't think they've got it in them in terms of not as defensively strong, not surprising teams. And Brazil, even though Brazil were disappointing and really didn't produce the tempo they needed to against Switzerland, they dominated in terms of possession, but the Swiss were quite physical with them, which I can understand why. Neymar still... not sure who he's playing for, whether he's playing for Neymar or whether he's playing for Brazil. I can talk about, you know, the fact he was fouled 10 times, but that's what he's pretty much playing for, is a foul all the time. So I'm not sure it's a very useful statistic. But I'd expect Brazil to come out there off a less than average display against Switzerland when they drew 1-1. And I believe that Brazil will get the 3 points they need against Costa Rica. So I'm going to Brazil 2 on this one. Costa Rica shutout again, no score. Nigeria-Iceland. Now, this is an interesting game because Iceland are not going to go forward. Iceland are going to play, I believe, the same game that they played against Argentina. They're going to try and wait for their opportunity. They're going to try and look for Nigeria to make a mistake. Whether Nigeria have got enough to break down this Iceland defence, I'm not quite so sure of. So for the Nigeria Iceland game, I'm going to go with my second prediction of a nothing draw. So that'd be, if that comes to pass, that'd be France 0-0 with Peru, Nigeria 0-0 with Iceland, and Iceland sitting with 2 points left in their group, and still Croatia to play. It'd leave Nigeria with 1 point, and both teams with a bit of a chance of going through, but Nigeria's would be very slender. Iceland would be in a better position going into that last game against Croatia. And finally, on Friday, the last game of the day, Serbia-Switzerland. Switzerland, I think the biggest problem for Switzerland is coming off a good result against Brazil, is not letting it go at their head. They're not a team that ever threatens to go deep, really deeply into the competition. But they have a good record in qualifying. They have a reasonably good record at World Cups in terms of getting out the group. They're dogged. They stick to their plan. They've got some mavericks in the team who can produce something special. Whether that goal should have been allowed against Brazil, I'm not quite sure. I understand that aspect of VAR when a push in the back on Miranda goes unpunished. I'm not sure what that decision could have been how it could be anything else but a foul. But this one, I think, is an interesting game. And I think Switzerland are going to get their second draw. And I think Serbia are going to get their fourth point. So I'm going to go Serbia 1, Switzerland 1. And that would leave everything sitting quite nicely, with Serbia having to play Brazil in the last game, both potentially on 4 points. Switzerland on 2 points, Costa Rica on no points, and Switzerland having to play Costa Rica, essentially, you would think, with a great chance of going through with a win. And of course, we have to remember that it's not head-to-head that decides any tiebreakers in the World Cup, but it's actually goal differential. And I think we could see, as we've seen in the past, some teams going into that final game not just looking at a win, but looking to rack up the score as well. So we'll just fit in one more set of predictions before signing off, and that is next Saturday, and it's Belgium against Tunisia is the first game. Now, Belgium handle Panama just very straightforward for them. Lukaku looked like he was enjoying himself. Hazard doing what he does best, which is running at defenders, taking them on, committing them. Dangerous shooting outside the box. Kevin De Bruyne had a pretty decent game defensively. They looked very, very good. It was almost like a warm-up game for Belgium in that 3-0 win over Panama. Tunisia gave England a lot more trouble, I think, than England wanted. I was really impressed by Tunisia's confidence in playing the ball out for the back, their ability to, I think, link. They ran out of steam a little bit, particularly in the second half, and England started coming on strong. But I thought in the first half it was a good Tunisia performance. But I don't think they're going to have enough to beat Belgium, so I'm going to go Belgium 2, Tunisia no score on this one, and that would give, if it comes to pass, Belgium full 6 points. Korea, Republic, and Mexico. Rather like Switzerland with their 1-1 draw against Brazil, Mexico's biggest problem is to make sure they don't make a balls of this. And after beating Germany, go and lose to a team like Korea Republic, who, although they had a couple of half chances against Sweden and had a particularly great chance with just seconds left when they should have equalised, they're nothing more than an average team. And I think Mexico on the day are better than an average team. So I'm going to keep my fingers crossed. I've always enjoyed watching, well, for years and years, not always, but certainly for last 20 years, I've quite enjoyed watching Mexico and Mexican teams. So I'm going to go Korea Republic 0, Mexico 1, and Mexico sitting atop of that group with 6 points after two games. And then this brings us to an absolutely monumental game with Germany against Sweden. You could make a mathematical case that Germany doesn't need to win this, and they could still go through if they got a draw and then beat Korea Republic in the final game. But I tell you, it'd be cutting it pretty thin, and it would be even though they would still have a chance, they would certainly be in terms of the odds would be against them. So they've got to sort themselves out. They've got to find a way of fixing the problems they had against Mexico. Kimmich has got to stay at home, or they find a new right back. Khedira, I thought, was quite not one-paced. He was just no-paced against Mexico. They've got to find ways of getting Toni Kroos more into the game. If he's going to be man-marked, they're going to find an alternative and find ways of putting him in space that where he's going to be able to create something more exciting. It was interesting, I thought, that Joachim Löw had talked about the need for balance in the team when he left out Leroy Sané from the squad. And the fact is that that was a German team that actually lacked balance. Kimmich at the right back was playing like a right winger. Draxler playing on the left side of midfield kept on cutting in time and time again, which just made Germany's job breaking Mexico down even more difficult. I thought when Julian Brandt came on, it was actually a little bit of gave them more options, being a natural left-footed player. So it'll be interesting to see if Brandt actually keeps his place in that team, and some of the changes that Löw, whether Löw will make some changes or not. Some of the consensus seems to be around the German media and the people that watch Germany a lot and know the inside workings of that squad, that Joachim Löw will stick with the players he always sticks with and just bank on them playing themselves out the problems. But they certainly had problems. They'd, Hummels and Boateng were left just on their own to make do as waves of Mexicans just attacked them on the break after being dispossessed in midfield. So they've got a number of problems to fix. They're going to play a very physical, very committed Swedish team. And this Swedish team is going to be one that, quite frankly, are going to be quite happy if they can take away a point. And they've shown against Italy in the two games that they can be very difficult to break down. And they can, with some of the physical players they've got up front, be quite effective. I'm still waiting to see Forsberg actually play the kind of game that he's capable of playing. He had a couple of chances against Korea Republic, which he kind of made a mess of, I thought, and was a wee bit disappointed. But anyway, to sum up, Germany have got to win this game, and I think they will, so I'm going to pick Germany 2, Sweden nothing. So that brings us to the end of the predictions through to World Cup next Saturday, and at that point we'll be very, very close to the third and decisive round of matches in some cases. And so just before we sign off, we're going to bring in producer Luke Crawford, as we do each week. Welcome, Luke.
Yeah, I just wanted to check up on something that you mentioned early on in the podcast. You were talking about Germany with their loss. It's not common that you have a team go through the entire tournament with a 100% record.
Yeah.
So that is true. It has only happened 4 times. So the most recent example was Brazil in 2002. They won all 7 of their games. What was interesting or of note was that they also won all 7 of those games in regular time without added extra time or penalties.
Very efficient.
Brazil also went 6 wins consecutively to win the title in 1970. And then in the 30s, there were two teams that won four games in a row to win the tournament. So that was in 1930 in Uruguay. And Italy in 1938 had four wins, but they did end up drawing Spain in the quarterfinals. And so it was 1-1 after extra time. So they played a replay the following day, which Italy won 1-0, and then they went on to win the title.
So, wouldn't it be interesting? I've often thought that, you know, we go back to, you know, such a regimented tournament now, but could you imagine the mayhem it would cause on TV and getting spectators ticketed and all the rest, all the things they would have to do if they decided to go back to a replay situation? Like, you got to remember when these teams went to, like, say, Uruguay in 1930, in these early tournaments, they didn't actually know when they were coming back. And I'm being quite serious about this. They went there. I was reading someplace, I think it was the Austrian team, took 3 weeks to get to Uruguay in 1930 and had no idea when they were coming back because the tournament just kind of flowed.
Yeah, well, and like, I don't know if it was the 1934 or the 38 tournament where they changed to the format where it just started with the round of 16. So if you're the U.S. and you showed up and you lost your first game, you're going back home. You're done.
Yeah, you're looking for some friendlies against a local team to make it worthwhile.
Exactly.
So you can come back and say, we went to the World Cup, we won six, lost one.
Yeah.
The one we beat six of the pub teams, but we lost to the real thing. But it's quite amazing. But just and didn't really touch on it too much. But just I think over the years there's been lots of debates, and we had debates on the Fox Soccer Report about, we didn't call it VAR at that time, but any technology being brought into the game. And my position for years was that I could understand why you would have technology to rule on things like, well, the best example is the ball over the line.
Right.
I think, you know, it's very definite. You know, an assistant referee can be in exactly the position they're supposed to be, but not be in line with that ball crossing the line. And it was just too many misses. So I felt that was a good use of it. I was very, very skeptical about the rest of it. But you know something, Luke? Watching this World Cup, I kind of like it. The only thing I don't like about it is, and this is maybe just me, right? Be interesting if some of the other listeners feel the same way. As soon as a goal's scored, I'd no longer have this emotional rush of it's a goal. If it goes against the team that I want to win, my first view is, hold it, cross your fingers, it might get chopped off. And if it goes the other way, and I hold my breath until it's all clear, right? And the other thing I'm waiting for here is, it's bound to happen. It probably won't happen in this World Cup, but with the implementation of VAR on a much wider footprint and just the number of games it's played, we are going to be in a situation one of these times when there's going to be a decision in the penalty box, the referee, it's going to be a foul that the referee does not give. The referee is going to play on. The ball is going to go up to the other end, and that team that committed the foul in their own penalty box is going to score a goal.
Right.
And everybody is going to go berserk because they're going to pull it back. So it's like a double whammy, right?
Yeah, pull it back. And
you're
then
not
the gut
one
punch
goal down.
The,
that's, yeah. Yeah, you've been had that cancelled, and now you've got a penalty kick. So it goes against you. You feel like crap. Goes with you, you think you've won the jackpot. The thing is, it's interesting because, you know, one part of me goes, you're going to have this VAR official who's in, and I think it's fascinating that they always show you the shot before the game from the VAR box, and they've all got their uniforms on, you know, hundreds, thousands of miles away, maybe three time zones away, four time zones away. But they show you that. But, you know, so in my little mind, in my little world, there's some official shouting in the referee's ear going, stop the frigging game, you idiot. It was a penalty, right? But they really can't do that. So in many cases, they're going to say to the referee, you just need to look at this.
Yeah.
So now in the referee's mind is, okay, I've got to look at it, but this team's counterattacking. What if I go back there and find that I was right the first time and now I've stopped them scoring? It's a tough one, right? It's tough all round. And so, but I didn't think I'd take to it as well as I did. As I say, I was quite skeptical about it. But in these situations, around the penalty box, in the penalty box in particular, I can see the use for it. And I think that, you know, as I mentioned before, the lack of red cards could be one of the almost unintended consequences of this, because
right.
But you also see. I don't know if you've noticed it. What the appeals have now changed to is when the players surround the referee, the appeals is, go look at the TV, ref. Right?
Yeah.
The other one I noticed yesterday, it was the Costa Rica-Serbia game, I believe, in Bolanos. Skied one over the crossbar with just about a minute left. Clearly offside. Uh-huh. But the Serbian defenders were so tied up, so nervous, you know, stomach must have been just cramping up because it was so close to the end. They were leading at that time. They're leading, I guess it was 1-0. But they're still up there. Balanis is, you know, clearly offside. He skied it over the bar, but the assistant ref had not flagged. They were going right. berserk at the assistant ref to get him to flag. Like, calm down, guys. If he'd scored, VAR's going to look at it and they're going to chalk it off. Yeah. Right? But I guess old habits die hard, right? And just that ability that players do have, taking these opportunities to vent and just let off a little bit of steam. Mm-hmm. You just wonder if maybe the counter of that is maybe they won't be able to let off as much steam and they'll have to redirect some of that tension elsewhere. But I think it certainly has been interesting. You know, before the end of this tournament, there could well be more than a couple of situations where I regret saying what I've said already. But I keep my fingers crossed and hope it works out well for them. Because let's face it, it's done nothing else but give jobs to a whole bunch of more officials for sitting in a TV booth miles and miles away collecting a paycheck.
I'm more like the pro boxing Vegas judges kind of fan, where I think a bad penalty call or a bad offside call is just as good as a volleyed goal. You know what I mean? Like a hometown decision at an important game, I think is just as exciting as a slide tackle or like I said, a panenka or something. You know.
But it will, I think, it's going to be the most interesting thing to watch, as it will change, I think, the psychology of the players, and I think it's going to change some other parts of the game that we're just not anticipating, and we're just going to see them evolve over the next couple of years.
Absolutely.
But anyway, that brings us to the end of this week's Soccer Report Extra podcast, World Cup edition. On behalf of producer Luke Crawford, Owen O'Callaghan, who can't be with us tonight, and Bobby McMahon, thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week. For someone who's so keen to snuggle, you
cause a lot of trouble. Thanks for listening to Soccer Report Extra. To keep tabs on the podcast and get all the latest news, musings, and rants from Bobby and Owen, like us on Facebook at Soccer Report Extra. Music for this podcast graciously provided by Manitoba's hottest indie pop group, Misery Slims. Check them out on Spotify and YouTube, and follow the band on Facebook at Misery Slims.